Welcome everyone to the Julie Jepson podcast. I am here today with Joy Davis. As always, just as a reminder, just to subscribe if you haven't already. We have had some amazing interviews with some amazing gritty women who I have come to love and admire. And I'm sure Joy will be right there in that same boat because I just interviewed her mother, who is like the sexual assault like professor who, I mean, has seen more things than I could probably ever relate to. I mean, has she shared a ton of experiences with you? Because she's only got two daughters, right? And six boys?
Yeah. So, I mean, we have balloons.
I was like, is she seeing that? Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Hasn't shared specifics, but I mean, growing up with her as my mom, there were definitely a lot of things that she made sure we were very aware of.
Yeah.
And did I always listen to my mom? No.
Yeah. I was going to say, because like, I was like, were you extra cautious of your daughters when they started dating? I mean, she must have given you a checklist.
I mean, I still remember probably one of the times I was the most mad at her in high school. I had been invited by a friend to go to this 4th of July celebration at a specific park. And I made all my plans. I was like 16 or 17 years old. And so I, you know, in my mind, I'm an adult.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing. I made all my plans. I was so excited to go. And my mom found out at the park and she was like, you are not going.
Oh, really?
And I was like, you're joking. And I mean, I was livid. I was really angry with her. I don't know if she remembers that story at all, but I look back on that and every now and then and just think, you know, the things that she has experienced and the things that she's seen, I think have given her a lot of heartache over the years.
Yeah.
I mean, what an amazing person to persevere through that heartache and not just be like, this system is so broken and it's so sad, but to then be like, this system is so broken. This is so sad. What am I going to do?
About it? And to like start making changes and research. Yeah. Good grief. Yes. Yeah. You guys must be really proud of her. Are you the oldest of eight then?
So I'm the second. So we have an older sister.
Okay.
Kate. And then me, and then
six boys.
Brothers.
Oh my gosh.
Okay. Every time she was, our first thought was again. And then second thought was, wait, but maybe it will be a girl this time.
Oh my gosh. And just six boys. At least you've got a sister. And then
what? The best thing about I won't, in case my brothers ever hear this, I won't say the best thing, but one of the best things about having six brothers is now they're all marrying these phenomenal women.
So you've got six sister-in-laws,
Are just cream of the crop. Sorry, that's my dog.
Well, I've got a child I have my hand underneath the door right here, and I'm holding his hand because he's. This is how we podcast. I call this closet casting because it's normally the only quiet place in the house, but all eight kids are home and somebody's watching them, but I like have to remain focused because I can hear his whimpering through the door. So let's get right into it. But you have four kids, right? Two girls and two boys?
Yes.
And she's also bribed them not to come in.
If I kept going, I had my two girls first and then two boys. So if I kept going, I would probably just have four more boys like my mom.
Oh, yeah.
So we're done.
Yeah. You're like, I can't risk that. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. That's so funny. Okay. And so you are a big advocate. Number one, I noticed on your Instagram page that you are big into women's like health and rediscovering like your own like fitness department of you know, in your own body. Like you're not some health expert, but you're realizing what you want to do for yourself. Right. And then, and then you've got also a special needs baby girl and you are a big advocate for, just disability awareness. Like, what do you call that?
So for me, I just talk about inclusion a lot.
Inclusion.
I mean, everyone in the world wants to feel like they belong. And inclusion is just such an important thing that, I mean, I was kind of oblivious to that growing up.
Yeah.
And I have learned so much having my daughter suddenly like being a part of this incredible community of people who advocate and go through really, really hard things. So yeah, I don't really know what you call it other than just an inclusion advocate. Mm,
yeah, I love that. So tell me then about... You guys, Nico, I know, hey, you gotta go lay down.
I'm not doing it for
me. I know.
Oh my gosh. Well, hi, Jolene.
I was like, where's she been? We'll just edit this part out. Anyway, okay, so tell me about you. You have four kids, and where do you live? Where, I mean, you married for how long? Tell me about you.
Okay, so I met my husband while we were both serving missions for the Church of Jesus Christ in Nashville.
Okay.
So we actually served in the same YSA branch for a few months and then worked on a project together with our mission president. So we knew each other really well. He was one of my closest friends.
Yeah.
And then as I was leaving to come home, there was an elder who said, hey, you should write Elder Davis. And I was like, what? No. No, thank you.
Yeah.
And he came home a few months later and tracked me down. And I just realized what I'd been missing. So we dated for a year and a half and got married in the fall of 2014, and about 3 months after we were married, it was actually like 2.5 months after we got married, we found out we were pregnant. So like honeymoon baby.
Yeah.
And we were excited, but I was still, you know, I was going to school at BYU. There was just a lot going on. But when we were dating, I still remember the very road we were driving on in St. George, which is where we now live. I remember the very road we were driving on. And out of the blue, my husband, his name's Nick, he said to me, I just want you to know, I'm pretty sure that I'm going to have a child with disabilities. I actually think he said special needs at the time. But and I just remember thinking like, okay, that's random, but okay. And in my head, I thought, I haven't really been around very many people with disabilities. And I'm not very familiar with that. And I knew he had done work with Special Needs Mutual. And then we're pregnant with this baby. And I just knew that something was coming. Mm-hmm. And she was measuring small. So I kept having these repeat ultrasounds, and at every ultrasound I kept asking the tech, like, does she have Down syndrome? Does everything look okay? Like, is there something going on? Is there any like kind of visible disability that you can see? And she kept telling me like, no, your baby is totally fine. And my daughter was born, her name's Emery Grace. And a few hours after she was born, I was looking at her, and something that I thought had maybe just been a bruise from birth was looking more like a birthmark. And I thought, huh, that's kind of unique. So I sent a picture to my parents. My dad's a pediatrician. My mom's a nurse. Mm-hmm. I sent a picture to my parents and I said, is this a bruise or a birthmark? And I got a shaky phone call from my mom. And she said, I think it's a birthmark. Dad and I have been talking. We don't want you to look anything up. Just wait till we can come and see you tomorrow and we'll talk about it. So, you know, we brought it up to our doctors and they were like, oh, maybe it's a birthmark. Maybe it's a bruise. And the more we learned, the more we discovered it was something called a port wine stain, which is a type of birthmark that's caused by malformed blood vessels. And those blood vessels were malformed, not just in her skin, but also in her brain on the right side. And so by the time she was 5 months old, she had had her first seizure. And it was a terrifying experience. We were flown on my flight from St. George to Salt Lake City. And she continued to seize on and off for 4.5 days. And it was just a really kind of surreal experience. suddenly being like, am I going to be able to take care of this child who has these medical complexities? How am I going to do this? And that was the first time that I realized I was going to have to get used to a new routine, a new normal. And that first time it was a new routine of medications. And then she had another seizure almost a year later. Her seizures were not very common, but they were really severe.
That's what I was going to ask you. Were they, like
a,
they were
yeah,
like,
you the... think of like a grand seizure. They weren't like that at all. They were very small movements, but they would last for sometimes hours. And when she was right before her second birthday, I had found out I was pregnant. And 5 days after I found out I was pregnant, Emery had a seizure. And she would actually have like these signs of a seizure several hours before. So we had this protocol with primary children's where we'd go into our local ER and they would call Lifelight. And if she digressed at all, they'd send us up. So the whole plan would take between like 4 to 6 hours to get her up to primary children's. So we were able to get her up there before she had her seizure. And I had just found out I was pregnant. She started seizing and my mom was with me. My husband was on his way up still. And my mom was with me when Emery stopped breathing and they called a code blue. And for those of you who may not know what a code blue is what the hospital calls when life-saving measures need to happen, like CPR or handbagging oxygen. It's when someone stops breathing or someone's heart stops beating. And my daughter had stopped breathing.
How long had she been like, seizing?
How long had she been seizing?
Yeah, before she wasn't breathing anymore.
It was probably around 45 minutes. Huh. And then she stopped breathing. And then they handbagged her oxygen for another 45 minutes. It was about 45 minutes until they could get her into the ICU and hooked up to a ventilator. And it was, you know, that was when we started talking about with her doctors about doing brain surgery. And so she recovered from that. It was a really scary thing, but she'd been doing really well. We had her enrolled in early intervention and she had caught up with her peers and we were planning to take her off of early intervention and out of physical therapy and occupational therapy because she was doing so well. She was riding a Strider bike. She was dancing. She would sing all the time. She was hilarious. She had her sense of humor is so funny.
So let me back you up a little bit, Joy. So from like zero newborn to age 5, was she hitting the milestones? Was she just a regular, normal little kid just with what looked like to be a birthmark? But did she have any symptoms of the blood vessels in her brain?
She was 2.5 when she had her stroke. But so from 0 to 2.5, she had some challenges, but unless you were a pediatrician or in physical therapy, you wouldn't even know. So when she ran, she had like this, you could hear her run with her little gait. Like she sounded kind of like a clopping horse. It was so cute. But again, like she kept up with all of her friends.
Wow.
And things just didn't really hold her back. And when she did have these periods where she would have a seizure, she would bounce back so quickly. And I even remember one time chasing her down the hospital of the kids, the pediatric unit that she'd been in for a few days. And she was so groggy from the medication she'd been on, but she just wanted to move and wanted to run around. So we were literally chasing her down the hall with her IV pole and trying to get her to like hold still and calm her. She was just wanting to go and go and go. And so, yeah, she was really typical. She just had this cute birthmark. And then I gave birth to my second daughter, Elsie May. And when Elsie was a month old, she was 5 weeks old. That's when we did this brain surgery for Emery called a hemispherectomy.
And they were hoping to do that to hopefully like keep the seizures at bay so she wouldn't have this breathing episode again.
Yeah. So a hemispherectomy, what it does is it separates the two sides of the brain. So one side of the brain can no longer communicate with the body. Hmm. So our plan was to separate the sick side of her brain where these malformed blood vessels were, because doing that would mean even if her brain had a seizure, it wouldn't affect her.
Wow.
That would leave her with some deficits, like not, I mean, she'd have to go to physical therapy to regain some strength in her hand, but she was 2.5. So we had full faith that, you know, the brain is so elastic. It can relearn and rewire things in such an incredible way.
Yeah.
So we had no doubt that she would bounce back. We'd seen her bounce back from two medically induced comas, from almost passing away.
Jeez.
Once. We'd seen her come out of these seizures and just be this strong, resilient kid. Yeah. So we had every hope that things would go well. And unfortunately, after she had the surgery, she had a brain bleed, which resulted in a brain stem stroke. So Emery was in a coma comas are really tricky. They're not like what you see in the days. So I can't really say like she woke up on this day, because it was much more gradual than that. But she was in a coma for about 2.5-3 months.
Jeez.
And did wake up. She was very, you know, when she was more coherent, she was very angry. She was very confused. And it was, you know, she was almost 3 at that point. And it was a really hard thing to try to explain to her, not even knowing how much she was in there. She could no longer talk. She could no longer walk. She could no longer hold anything in her hand. She could no longer hug us. She couldn't eat. She couldn't drink anything. It was a devastating prognosis to get. And she was officially diagnosed with quadriplegic spastic cerebral palsy. And cerebral palsy is kind of a tricky thing, because cerebral palsy is something that typically happens. It's a stroke that happens in utero.
Yeah.
And that's not what happened with Emery, but it's kind of the easiest way to explain it for most medical professionals to understand. But we, in layman's term, essentially, she is now quadriplegic with something called locked-in syndrome. She's in there, but she can't speak and she can't use her body. So we are lucky that we get to take care of her and that she lets us take care of her. It's been a huge learning process.
Oh my gosh.
A lot of patience on everyone's, on all sides. And, you know, we're figuring things out one day at a time. And she is 8.5 now, and she is vibrant and hilarious. She has a ton of friends. She has, by some miracle in this whole nightmare of a thing, she has kept her sense of humor, which is one of my favorite things and has always been one of my favorite things about her. And so that to me is a huge miracle.
Tell me how you can tell that she has a sense of humor if she's not able to talk or.
So she's kind of cheeky. We first started noticing that she would like smile when someone would like fall or trip or get hurt. Like when her sister would fall down or run into something and be crying, we'd hear Emery start to giggle. And over the years, that has turned into a full-blown laugh. So she thinks it's hilarious when other people get hurt.
So do you ever put like America's Funniest Home Videos on for her?
She loves AFV. She loves it so much. It's hilarious. And she also, you know, I hear from her teachers at school that if a student gets in trouble, Emery will just be sitting there cracking up.
Oh
just
my gosh.
Laughing away. Oh, it's not me.
Oh, that is so funny.
Yeah, she's hilarious. She also has the ability to say a couple of things. But the thing that she can say most consistently that we hear probably over 100 times a day is Obama. And that is,
no that way.
That's her word. That's her word for everything. She says Obama if she's hungry. She says Obama if she wants me to hug her. She says Obama if she wants a different shirt on. She says Obama if she's thirsty, if she wants to go outside.
Oh my gosh, whatever that's so funny.
Or whatever she's saying to anybody, she uses the word Obama.
Maybe so she thinks she's saying oh mama. Oh mama.
Started saying Obama, it was October of 2022. And when she first started saying it, she would also say mama. Oh. But she had to really think about it. And I remember the first time she said mama. It was the first time I'd heard her say it in almost 5 years.
Oh.
And I sobbed. And she, of course, thought it was so funny. So she's laughing because I'm crying. And she just keeps saying, mama, mama.
Oh. Like, yes! That is so precious. So did any of her, like, are any of the things that she has lost able to come back? I mean, I know her sense of humor, but like yeah. physically or verbally to where she was.
I mean, there are so many wonderful things out there now. Mm. Who knows what the next decade or two will bring with technology and yeah. with medical advances. The unfortunate thing about a brainstem stroke is it's not like a regular stroke in the yeah. brain. The brain has ways of, you know, if someone has a stroke in an area, the brain has ways of rerouting that information and rebuilding those neurons and those connectors. The brainstem doesn't have that same ability. The brainstem is where everything, all the messages pass through.
Mm.
So, you know, you might have, if you think of it this way, you might have your cell phone and you can do all sorts of things on your cell phone. But if you don't have access to a satellite to send those messages, or you don't have access to Wi-Fi, you can't get those messages out, then the phone doesn't really do anything for you. Mm. And so even though she is telling, you know, her brain is telling her body, move your leg. Move your hand, hold this, open your mouth. Those messages are getting obstructed in her brainstem. There are some things that she has learned how to do. She can now eat. She kind of goes through stages where she does a little bit better with eating. And there are some seasons where it's a lot harder for her. Right now is one of those really hard seasons.
Hmm.
But she can eat, you know, her favorite thing that she demands she has every day for lunch is a banana and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. So she has that every day for lunch. And if that is not served to her, she will not eat it. And she does that by turning her head as far as she can. And she just will refuse to even look at you if you have something other than a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for her.
That's so funny.
She's learned how to eat again. I don't think she'll ever be able to drink water.
Hmm.
I think it's a really hard thing, especially because she used to be able to drink water. And, you know, when you eat something like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, like you need a glass of milk or a glass of water.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, you know, when you put a bite of food in your mouth, your brain is thinking, oh, chew, then swallow.
Yeah.
But when you put a liquid in your mouth, it's that immediately, you know, it's that immediate, okay, get ready to swallow.
Right.
And now swallow. So that message goes so quickly. Emery doesn't have time to close her airway. Mm. So it's just not to drink any kind.
I guess, I mean, when you say she can eat now, like I'm thinking pick up a fork and put it in your mouth. Like you're talking about chewing and swallowing.
Yes, she can chew and swallow. She cannot feed herself. So we feed her everything. Okay. So we cut everything into bite-sized pieces, and we take turns feeding her at meals.
And how does she hydrate?
So she has a G-tube. Okay. She received her G-tube when she was still in her coma, and that's kind of when things really started to sink in for us that she was not going to be the same. She, and, you know, in my head, I'm thinking she's not going to be okay. luckily, like, things have turned, well, all right, backtrack a little bit, but yeah, that was kind of the time when I realized her life really was going to be very different permanently. This was a permanent change. There was no wishing that would make this go away. So she got her G-tube in the spring of 2018, and that's how she received her nutrients and her hydration. That's how she got everything. And then over time, it took her about 6 months to be able to chew a few bites. And within a year, she was almost completely off of G-tube feeds, and we just use her G-tube for hydration. Now, unfortunately, she has digressed a little bit. And she, you know, it takes her now about 45 minutes to an hour to eat a meal, just chewing and swallowing. So that's just a lot of work.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she's going to learn a lot more at school. And so we've started doing formula feeds through her G-tube again in the morning, so that when she gets to school, she's not exhausted from eating her breakfast.
Yeah.
And she has a full stomach, and she can focus on learning and being social, spending time with friends, and doing her daily therapies at school.
Well, how do you like quench her thirst? Do you just like maybe spray her mouth with a spray bottle, like after a peanut butter sandwich? Like,
So she's kind of gotten used to it now. We used to use those applesauce pouches. We'd feed her, and then we'd give her like a little sweet, a little squirt of the applesauce. But she doesn't really want it anymore. She has a really deep palate. The roof of her mouth is really deep. So we have some oral sponges that we'll take and get water on them and swab her mouth out. If we put too much water on, she chokes. So we have to be really, really cautious with the type of liquid that's going in her mouth.
What about, like, I mean, I'm just thinking about regular motherhood and regular parenting. If they get the flu, or if they get, I mean, if they're coughing, how do you handle that when she has to like throw up, or just from a virus?
It's like, that is like one of my biggest fears, is that she will, because how often is it the middle of the night and your kid comes in and they're like, "Mom, I don't feel good." And then they throw up all over the place, you know?
And she can't do that.
Well, I have a little girl that she can't get out of bed to tell me that she's going to throw up. And so by some miracle, every time she has thrown up, we have either heard it, or she hasn't been laying down all the way, or there's been some kind of like miraculous intervention that has kept her from laying down and throwing up.
Wow.
So that's been a huge miracle, because she would aspirate on that. She would choke.
Oh my gosh. And that could be
really dangerous. She could get pneumonia from that, or I mean, worse, she could pass away from having stomach flu and vomiting being able to clear her airway.
What about like coughing?
So she's actually been hospitalized a few times with colds, and it's crazy. It's not these wild things, you know. She's never been hospitalized for COVID or anything too crazy, but she has been hospitalized for stomach bugs and just a common cold, rhinovirus. And it's just because she just doesn't have that same muscle tone that most people have to be able to cough things up and get things out of her airway and out of her lungs. We actually, for the first time last summer, she had to come home on oxygen, and we'd never really had that before. So that was a unique experience. And it's never far from that. The dangers of her catching just a common cold are very, very real.
I was going to say, I mean, you're just like on call at all times. Duty, like at all times. Tell me then how have you like come to terms with being hopeful from a surgery that didn't go as planned, and like the resentment or the bitterness or the questioning yourself, like how have you gotten past that? Or do you believe like it was always going to be this way?
Yeah, I mean, it's taken a lot of years. And I'm very proud to say that I don't cry every day anymore. Yeah. That's taken a long time. Do I think about that surgery every day? Absolutely. And I probably will for the rest of my life. You know, my life is kind of defined in two time periods. There is the time before Emery's stroke that was my childhood and falling in love and starting my family. And then there was the time after Emery's stroke. And my whole life is kind of sectioned into those two pieces. And I've learned some really helpful emotionally resilient things that have helped. One of those is that this will always hurt. It will always hurt because it's my child. Yeah. If it was me and I had to get over this, that's another thing. But this is my daughter that I have to watch suffer and struggle every single day for the rest of her life. That's really, really hard. And my grief around that and the heartache I feel, it will never go away.
Yeah.
It won't. But there are things that I can do to make sure that that's not all I feel. Because I don't want that to be all my daughter feels.
Yeah.
I want her feel joy and happiness. I want her to make memories that when her cute little brain is thinking back on something, she immediately smiles and starts laughing, remembering that time that we, you know, did a circus at home or we made an obstacle course in the driveway. You know, I want even the little like mundane things, I want her to look back on her days and think, I'm really glad I'm alive today.
Yeah.
Because I don't know how many days she has on this earth.
Right.
I would love it if she had decades. I would love that. But the reality is her life expectancy is no longer what it was.
Right.
And with the time that we have her, I want her to really enjoy and love her life. I want her to know that she's loved. I want her to know how to love. And I want her to feel like she has a voice. That's been a really important thing to me. So that's been a huge focus that we've had the last year, is helping her have a voice. So she actually has an eye gaze machine that she's been using at school. So it's like a giant iPad. And it has this bar on the bottom with these two red dots. And those dots track her eyes and can tell us where on the screen she's looking. And then it will speak for her.
Wow.
And we've actually had it for almost 3 years, but the first 2 years, it was just too much work. She did not want to do it.
Yeah.
I told you, she's kind of cheeky.
Yeah.
It would just, you know, we'd ask her, okay, can you find the picture of mom on the screen?
She wasn't hearing that.
Can you find that? Like just refusing to. So now she's doing a lot better. And luckily she has some fabulous teachers at school and aides at school that know her really well and know that she tries a lot of things.
I'm assuming it's like a specialized school, right?
She's actually just at a mainstream school.
Just a normal school.
And she, wow. Yeah, and she's in a SPED class.
Hmm.
And she has one-to-one care, which really is necessary when you have a child that can't speak and can't move their body. You need someone to be one-to-one. So we're really grateful that we have that for her. And yeah, they know that she tries to get out of things. So they're good at saying, no, Emery, we know you can do this.
Yeah.
And then circling back. So one of the other lessons that I've learned that I think about probably every day, if not every other day, is this concept of having hope and acceptance. I think when Emery first had her stroke, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I have seen the videos of someone who's like been in a car accident and they've had to relearn how to walk and their mom never gives up on them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be that mom. And at first I was like, she's going to walk. I'm going to will this to happen. I'm going to pray for this to happen. This is what is going to happen. And then it didn't. And she could lay in a bed. And I was so angry and confused. And I thought, no, I have all this hope. Like, this is what's going to happen. And I realized that just having that hope was actually crippling her from having success. Hmm. Because I had these hopeful expectations of what her life would be and what our life would be, but I wasn't willing to accept what actually was. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself in this camp of, well, this is what it is. So we might as well just sit at home and I'll cry and Emery will cry and my baby will just all be sad. And that's what we're going to do because this is what it is. And it is not fun. This is horrible, yeah. You know? And so I would find myself kind of in one or the other, one of these camps or the other. And after a while, I just realized that they were both so crippling. But if I could work on them together, if I could marry hope and acceptance together and accept what the reality was of what we were going through, but have hope that I could figure out a way to make it better. Mm. It just created this beautiful building block for our whole family. And we just started working on that. And now I'm at a place where I have all the hope in the world that Emery will learn how to read using this eye gaze machine. I have a lot of hope that she'll be able to read a book. I would love that. I'm also accepting that right now, she may not be totally ready for that. So right now we work on flashcards. Hey, can you find a picture of the cat on your board? And we start there. And by doing that, I'm not having these unrealistic expectations of her. I'm just trying to help her find what's going to work for her to help her build on her life. Hmm. Because ultimately, you know, my name is Joy.
I was going to say, do you feel like you need to honor your own name?
Yeah. And, you know, it's okay. So this is a little bit of a side story, but it is very, very important to who I am and my life. So pretty much everyone, all of my siblings are named after people. Mm. They all have family names, except for me. And growing up, I just thought, why did you guys name me Joy? Like, that's a word. That's not a name. And I did not like my name. I remember asking my mom multiple times if I could change it. I wanted to be Joyce for a while. I didn't love my name. And then I found myself so I was diagnosed with clinical depression when I was 13. And have kind of struggled with that my whole life. And I found myself a freshman in college resenting my name because I thought my name is Joy and that is not what I feel. That is the opposite of how I feel.
Yeah.
And over the years, you know, I've asked my parents multiple times, why did you name me this? And now I love my name. Hmm. And my parents have both said, you know, when you were born, we didn't know if we were going to have a boy or a girl. And we were just so happy. We knew your name was supposed to be Joy. We just knew. And I've thought back on that so much, how God knew that I would need this name. Mm. I would need a reminder for the rest of my life to find Joy. And if I can teach my kids anything, it is I want them to find Joy. I want them to find Joy in their family, in their faith, in their life, in even like the daily mundane things. I want them to experience Joy. So I actually changed my Instagram a while ago to Every Day with Joy, because that is something I focus on, is how can I find Joy in my day? Even if it's the crappiest of days, and we've had some really bad ones,
yeah.
But being able to find Joy kind of helps us take a step back from the current perspective and see things on a little bit of a broader scale. Mm. So I think that's really what has aided in this whole idea of having both hope and acceptance, is if you can step back and you can try and find a little bit of joy in your day, then you can see, okay, yes, this is the situation. It sucks. But I also have this hope and I feel this joy. I love these people. And with that, I can keep moving forward. So I think that's kind of where our family is at right now, is we're kind of in the stage of patience with each other and finding joy in the everyday.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had mentioned the fitness and body positivity stuff.
Yeah.
And that's a very new thing for me. I, you know, over the last few years, I've had a lot of stress and I've gained about 50 pounds in the last couple of years, which has been very, I feel weird saying devastating, but it felt very like devastating to me emotionally. I found myself like always wearing black, and I'm wearing black today. So
me
that's
too.
Helpful, but
me too.
But, always wearing black, and I used to wear a ton of color. Like I used to love dressing up in like mixing patterns,
yeah.
And it felt like it was me, it was my personality. And then I found myself always wearing that black, always having my hair like curly and down, and always having makeup on. I felt like I was just trying to hide myself and just blend in. And I realized a few months ago that I did not love my body, and I did not know how to love my body. I didn't even know where to start. And in the back of my mind, I had this like sickening guilt that how can I not love my body when my body, I can pick something up and hold it.
Yeah.
I can go for a walk around my block. I can pick up my kids. Not everyone has that ability.
Yeah.
I have a child in my own home who she can't play with her siblings. She can't pick up a Barbie doll and play with her sister. She can't turn the page on a book.
Hmm.
It was almost like, how dare I think so poorly of this amazing body that I have? Because I sit here and I tell Emery, you have an amazing body. It's not the same that it used to be, but it is amazing. And it has kept you here. And you get to have all these cool experiences with all these people you love because of your body. How can I teach her that if I can't love my own body?
I love that.
So I decided I had to figure that out. So I'm in that process. And something that I have learned is the more I take care of my body, the more I love my body. Mm. And the more I love my body, the more I take care of my body.
Yeah.
And it's been this cycle that's been really helpful. And, you know, have I lost a few pounds? Yes. But more so, like, I went to the gym yesterday in, like, baby hot pink gym
pants.
Like, I can tell you the last time I wore like a bright color at the gym for fear of sticking or looking too big I just wanted to blend in. And now I'm at this place where it's like, this body.
Yeah.
This is my body. It looks like me. I'm so lucky that it looks like me. It's supposed to look like me. And this is what I look like. And, you know, being able to take care of my body is such a privilege. Because as I take care of my body, I can help take care of my daughter.
Well, and there's a post where where you say, you know, I do this and you're working out so that I can do this. And it's where you pick her up. You know, you're lifting your weights and exercising so that you are fit enough and, you know, well enough and strong enough to pick up your own child. And I think that is so admirable and inspiring. And one thing I did want to mention before we close this out is that you're talking about acceptance and hope and how you're trying to like marry the two together. And like, as you were doing this with your fingers, I was like, oh my gosh, it's like, it's as if she's taken that broken hemisphere in the brain and you've mended it back together.
Oh my gosh. I love that.
Do you know what I mean? Because like you did this with, and it reminded me of a brain.
Yes.
You know, it's like acceptance and hope, and they've been like grafted back in together. You know, I was like, healed so many things just with that analogy. You know what I mean? And I love how you talked about that. I mean, I'm dealing with that in my own life, accepting something or refusing at first to accept and hoping, wishing, praying, fasting, pining, just pleading. And if I chose to accept what was happening, I equated that with not having enough faith. You know, well, then yes. That must mean I don't have enough faith. I have to be stronger. And then we make ourselves crazy. But being able to take what's been thrown at us, given to us, the card that's been dealt to us, and marrying, as you put it, marrying that together with hope, like it's the perfect balance. And it's the perfect way to like take those two hemispheres that are completely opposite, left brain and right brain, and like graph them together. So I love that because I'm going to be thinking about that forever, how I can in my own life accept something, whether I like it or not, and see how I could flip it with hope and make my situation hopeful despite the loss it once was.
Right.
So I
and
love that.
The heart, and I think it's very natural for us to say like, well, I prayed for this. You didn't answer my prayer. You didn't answer it. And, you know, there was a good 10 months after Emery's stroke where I felt nothing.
Yeah.
There was, you know, when I was with my daughter, I would feel something so special, but it would often just be replaced with anger and anger towards God too, because
totally.
You told me to do this surgery. I prayed about this. My whole family fasted about this and we felt like this was the right thing to do. How is this the right thing to do? You told me to do this and then you let this horrible thing happen. Why can't you just fix her? Why can't you heal her? I've prayed. In my head, I'm thinking I did all the things I was supposed to. I served a mission.
Yeah.
I've stayed at the church. I go to the temple. I read my scriptures. I'm thinking all of these things that I'm actively doing. And feeling like I don't have enough faith.
I know.
So
yeah.
Are you even there? You know, we go through that. And I think over time, I just came to the realization that, you know, I think it's Nephi who says, I don't know why God does certain things, but I know that he loves his children.
Yeah.
I don't know why this happened. I don't know why my daughter's life is the way it is. But I'm at this point where I also know he always saw this plan for her from the beginning.
Yeah.
From my husband telling me, hey, I'm pretty sure I'm going to have a child with disabilities. What in the world?
Like, yeah, that's so crazy.
From years and decades and a millennia ago, this was always his for her and always his plan for me. And there's just kind of a beauty in that, in knowing that it's hard and it's awful and it's painful, but he knows it's hard. He knows it's awful. He knows it's so painful, and he's still there. And I'm still there, and she's still here. And somehow we're going to figure it out together.
Well, this was inspiring for me. Thank you. I'm going to go to bed being so grateful for everything. Cause I think, like you said, like I'm following the yellow brick road to the temple. I have served a mission. I've kept my covenants. I'm a strong member of the church and I magnify my calling. This is owed to me, you know, like I deserve the good treatment cause I'm choice, you know? Like this can go happen to somebody else.
Thank you for thinking that, but the moment, it makes so much sense.
Yeah, where's my blessings? Like we're the prodigal daughters here.
You said there were those of blessings.
Totally, and then you are, you know, finding the blessings through that hard, and that's where you're full of grit, just like your mom. You know, full of grit, which is perseverance, not quitting, accepting it and moving forward anyway. And you are a warrior, Joy. Thank you so much for talking with me.
I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Yeah, make and sure.
I appreciate so much I'm gonna think of that
yes,
now.
Yes. Well, you like it was when you did this with your hands. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's like a brain. It's like she's healed that separation. You know, in your own daughter's brain. I was like, oh my gosh, I love that. I'm like, does she know what she's saying? Because it instantly came into my mind, this symbol of like, the brain has come back together just in a different way, you know? And it could be, you know, more for you than for her because she's already perfect, you know? And she always will be. So thanks again. I just wanted to remind everyone to subscribe if you loved this podcast. Joy's Instagram is Everyday with Joy.
Yep.
Which is amazing. Follow her for more and more inspiration. And thanks again for talking with me.